pretty early on that his domestic hegemony needs to be somehow transformed into an EU level. And many say that, of course, he has anti-EU and everything, but he said it many times. He wants to conquer Brussels. He doesn't want to exit the EU. He wants to conquer the EU because that's what he needs for his internal dominance as well. You are fighting one fight in Hungary about something. You are fighting another one, which are in completely different temporal spaces. And then they start interacting with each other. Sometimes they reinforce each other and you get political capital. You win another elections out of it. But sometimes they enter into total opposition with each other. One fight starts to cannibalize the other one. And I think that that also happened with Orban, that his international hegemony building actually started cannibalizing his internal dominance, in the sense of being so subservient to Trump and not realizing that the EU-US split is going to be not so much in his favor in certain respects. He has to conquer the EU first to be able to have a strong relationship with Trump. If it doesn't happen, the whole thing crumbles.
Okay, so we can celebrate. National populism has fallen. European liberal technocracy rides again. It's back. The nightmare that began with Trump and Brexit in 2016 is over. We can close the book on that miserable decade. Of course, being sarcastic, but the news is that Viktor Orban, who has ruled Hungary for the past 16 years, has seen his Fidesz party routed at the polls by Péter Magyar's Tisza party. Over the past decade and a half, the central European country of less than 10 million people, not to diminish Hungary, but, you know, it's not a very large country and it's become a frequent touchpoint in political discussions and even a global organizational hub for the radical right. So it's no surprise that Orban's defeat has been loudly commemorated beyond Hungary. But, and this is a little bit of a spoiler for what we're about to discuss, it seems that Magyar's Tisza doesn't seem to represent much of a change in political direction. It also seems to me that international discourse, both conservative and liberal, about Hungary, and Orban's own globally oriented anti-globalist rhetoric, that both these things are a lot more grand and maybe even world historic in their pretensions than the actual domestic politics of Hungary. Was this an election between a dangerous authoritarian, a Russian-loving fascist, versus a seditious avatar of Globo Homo set out to steal our precious bodily fluids? Or is it something a little bit more mundane? We're going to find out. I'd like to welcome onto the podcast Szilard Papp, who's a Hungarian political analyst and editor at the independent media channel Partizan. Hello, Szilard. Great to have you on.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. Dream come true.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's what we like to hear. And so we're here to find out the motives and meaning behind Orban's defeat in its own terms, and also discuss all this global ideological stuff, what it means for the structures of European technocracy, as well as for its national populist opposition. And indeed, maybe even whether national populist is the right term. We're going to come on to all of that. But first of all, you've just been in Hungary. You're Hungarian yourself, but you're now in Barcelona. But you've spent a little while in Hungary. And we're just telling you before we started recording about the celebrations, about what you were doing there. So maybe if you can give us a sense of the vibe.
I'm Hungarian and also Hungarian from Romania, so the truest kind of Hungarians, you know, the ones that were taken away by the Paris Treaty. So, yeah, and also the one who got Hungarian citizenship because of Orban, because that was one of his introductions. Uh-huh, but yeah, right. So yeah, what was happening on the streets? Yeah, after we finished, we had like a long entire day broadcast about the elections. And after we wrapped up, I went out and the city was just crazy, like a street festival at the entire city. I walked around 2 hours. Everybody was, I mean, there were like official, you know, stages put up by Tisza Party in certain locations. There was a central, I don't know, result waiting party or something like that, like this electoral party. but also around the city on squares. It was a bit like a Spanish experience in many respects. The squares were alive, which is not that representative of Hungarians usually, much more sitting at home type of guys. But yeah, so everybody was like drinking around, you know, strangers hugging each other. At some point, one of my friends just said like, oh, I want a beer. And then got a beer in her hand immediately. And, you know, this kind of like strangers coming together and being very happy. So basically that was a very euphoric atmosphere in the entire city and also in bigger in other bigger towns of Hungary as well.
Yeah, well, and I imagine it's probably maybe a different scene in Budapest to other smaller towns and in the countryside. I'm always struck by, so there's this map, I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I think it's so evocative about whether you identify more with your nation or with your subnational region in Europe. And then there's a third option of whether you identify more with Europe than with either your nation or your region. And most of Europe, you know, it's either your nation or your region. And then there's one little dot, little blue dot, which is an exception, which is Budapest, in which the people there identify more with Europe than either their nation or their region. And I don't know if that holds true or what this polling data was, but you know, I think it's evocative.
That's how the electoral map used to look for the last 16 years as well. So basically the entire countryside with like the single member constituencies was orange, which is Orban's party's color, so Fidesz's color, and the entire countryside was orange. And then in the center, small blue hole representing Budapest, the capital city, and the constituencies that were won by the opposition. Sometimes there were two more small spots in two southern big cities, but otherwise, and now the whole map just changed. So it's not like it turned around. Like now the whole map is blue and orange is only at the periphery, a couple of counties in the western and the eastern border of Hungary.
Right, right. Well, so let's get on to the electoral map, because first of all, can you tell us what the scale of Fidesz's wipeout is, both, you know, principally in terms of the electoral map, but also it's a government that's been in power for 16 years, has changed the constitution, etc. So it's obviously got its tentacles into institutions, transformed them. So how significant is Tisza's victory, not just in terms of the makeup of parliament, but how you see that playing out in terms of the institutions?
Well, first, I think we have to talk about the parliamentary share of mandates, because that's what counts, after all, in terms of the institutional setup of Hungarian politics. And so the Fidesz introduced a new electoral law and a new electoral system in 2011. And since then, this is the fourth elections. And this is the fourth time that we get a parliamentary supermajority. So more than two-thirds of the mandates go to one party. So every time this electoral system produced a two-thirds supermajority, which is interesting in many respects, three times for Fidesz and now for Fidesz's opposition, Tisza party. So in this respect, the two-thirds majority allows you to do basically anything you want. You can rewrite the constitution at whim. You can change any kind of institution. You can change the people in those institutions. You can stuff the constitutional court, you know, just like increase the number of justices to like double it and put in new people. So you can do whatever you want. It's a strange thing because this kind of two-thirds majority was introduced after the post-socialist transformation, so the transition to democracy, in order to foster a consensus about big issues, big institutional issues, how you write the constitution, how's the electoral law, how you build up the justice system and so far. But with the new system, basically always one party gets two-thirds majority, so this whole consensus point is just moot. And so in this respect, compared to, for example, the Polish case, where in 2003 the radical right was defeated by a coalition led by Donald Tusk, there they didn't get a constitutional majority, so their room for maneuver was much more narrow, and they could they are having a lot of conflicts right now as well, with the president being of the old order. And